Hello and welcome to episode 181 of the Bronx Beat podcast presented by Baseball Prospectus. I'm EJ Fagan and tonight is just me and Jim Carruthers.
Just the two of us, EJ.
Just the two of us. Manny Machado will not be joining us on this podcast.
I'm thankful for that.
I am glad you are. So Manny Machado signed today. I've got lots of thoughts. I don't want to spend too much time on those thoughts, and so I'm going to set a timer for both of us. We will not exceed 2 minutes talking about Manny Machado. When you hear the sound, whatever my iTunes ringtone is, playtime, that sound will start in 2 minutes. Jim, what did you think about Manny Machado not signing with the Yankees for 10 years, $300 million?
I think at that price, I think it's kind of silly for him to sign anywhere. I mean, I think it's well documented that I don't think he's worth A-Rod money. And he's getting paid, you know, $6 million more per year than Robbie Cano, a guy who's, you know, at equal points in their career, Robbie Cano was a substantially better baseball player in my eyes. So I'm glad that the Yankees didn't dump that kind of money into him. I think the Padres are going to be exciting, but between Machado and their farm system, but for an odd fit player, I'm thankful that the Yankees dodged a bullet and didn't invest as heavily in Machado. Mm-hmm. I'll give you the time.
I'm glad. Yeah, you yield back the balance of your time. I'm happy that he did not sign in the AL East. I think at 10 years, $300 million, he's a bargain. Over the next 4 or 5 years, he's probably a $40 to $50 million player, you know, by like your baseball Fangraphs war and all that. And that's for the average team. And for the Yankees, they have a budget. They have money. And that money isn't useful if they don't spend it. And I don't know what's the opportunity cost here? Like, what player are the Yankees going to fail to sign because Manny Machado signed elsewhere? Because I don't think that there's only one other argument not to sign a player, and that's that you got a better player kind of waiting in the wings. And I don't think the most optimistic Miguel Andujar fan thinks that they're better than Machado, right? So, like who are we not signing in 2 years because Manny Machado is now a San Diego Padre?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's anybody immediately that comes to mind. I think that in the Yankees' mind, the way I see it is they didn't lose to the Sox because they couldn't hit. They lost to the Sox because they couldn't contain that lineup. From that perspective, I could see why Cash and the rest of the Yankee brass would prioritize.
Okay. We are done talking about Manny Machado, everybody. We will never talk about him again. But why? Because it's not like we're going to be facing him in the playoffs anytime. So, So let's talk about Luis Severino. So the Yankees signed Luis Severino to a contract extension. It is a 4-year contract extension with a 5th-year team option. The 4 years would be his normal years before free agency. The 5th year is 1 year in free agency. It is worth $52.25 million if you exercise the option, a little less if you don't exercise the option. Are you happy that Luis Severino is now locked in for a while?
I'm happy because I think this, if nothing else, this takes the pressure off Randy Levine screwing up another arbitration down the road for us. I mean, I that's the first thing that came to mind with this deal because
you mean telling Don Betances that he's an asshole to his face? And
exactly. Yeah. Yes. We don't get the Betances, our future ace, our Pedro. I ran the numbers. So like from a net present value perspective, like if you look at the future money cost of with respect to what Severino's giving up in that 5th year, even if he's making $10 million more than his $15 million option, it only comes out to about $2 million in today's dollars. And for that, he gets to hedge and he's protected for 4 years from some obscure injury or, you know, performance anomalies. And for the Yankees, they get to avoid Randy Levine being in the newspaper, which is really good for them and good for their future arbitration hearings because he just poisons everything that he touches. So I'm ecstatic.
Yeah, I'm kind of glad for him that he didn't have to sign like 3 free agent years away or anything like that.
Yeah.
If he is really good and if he quote regrets signing this deal because he's so good, he'll make plenty of money in free agency at this point. And he's really only losing, you know, 1 year and, you know, $20 million or something like that. I think that Severino is really good. I think that I don't blame him for wanting to hedge, but I don't think this is a case of a player not betting on himself. This is a kid without a big bonus. And pitchers are fragile, and you never blame a guy for making his first $50 million. Like, I could be the guy being like, well, he could have gotten $70 million had he just gone through arbitration. But let's be honest, like that's just not a good way to approach things. And I'm not someone who can really talk here.
Well, I also think that there really is something to be said for money now. Like you said, he didn't have a big bonus. And money now in a lot of financial circles is worth a lot more than money later. So to only cost 1 year of free agency, he'll still come out at 29 from this deal. So he can still get his mega deal coming out. And the cloudiness behind the labor, the state of labor in 2021, I think also comes into play here. So he gets some money ahead of that potential labor stoppage issue. So I think it's a good play by him. It's really, really clever.
The Yankees have a lot of players in Severino's generation. Aaron Judge, Gary Sanchez, Gleyber Torres, Miguel Andujar, arguably some of the relievers, but let's ignore them for a second. And let's ignore the players who are closer to free agency, like Gregorius and Hicks. If you could only sign one player to an extension, would it be Severino, or would you go for one of the other guys?
I think Severino has done the most of anybody on that list.
He's been really good for 2 years now.
Extremely good. He's up there with Ron Guidry with his numbers in terms of strikeouts, wins, basically every performance measure for a Yankee pitcher just starting out. Severino is right there with the Gator.
I think there's an argument for going for the hitter. I would love to lock Gleyber Torres up for more of a 20s. But at the same time, that's more expensive to do, and maybe you don't do that. So good on the Yankees. I hope that they, now that they're not spending the monster deal on someone like Machado, and we know that's not going to happen, and we know that they kind of have a good picture of what their short-term payroll will look like, I'd like them to start signing a lot of these players. I would love to keep the five or six of them together for a decade total or whatever. The Yankees traditionally haven't signed a lot of players to contract extensions. But I think that these players are uniquely good enough, kind of like those early Yankees of the 90s, that you can do it. You can definitely break your rules there.
Yeah, the last one that I can really remember was Gardy, right?
Gardner and Cano signed one, I think, to Gardner that. Yeah, but they declined to give Chingming Wong an extension. That was like the other candidate that could have gotten one.
Yeah.
And that was a good choice by them. That's about all we have to say about that. Good for Luis Severino. I think he's going to have a pretty good year. Is kind of my bet at this point. Let's move on and talk about spring training. So it's starting. We will have, I believe, a week from Saturday, we will have actual baseball on television. It could be this coming Saturday. It could be a week from Saturday. I don't actually remember the schedule. But the Yankees will have some interesting spring training games over that time. As always, it's fun for like a day or two to watch the actual name brand players to go out there and like take rounders and play four innings. But that's not, I don't know about you, that's not why I watch spring training. I watch spring training because it's you get to see the Yankees auditioning both prospects and non-roster invitees who have a chance to make the big leagues. Are you on the same page with me there?
Yeah, I mean, the only exception is I get really excited at the Yankees Instagram feed pictures of like Aaron Judge just standing outside a batting cage. Other than that, everything is totally true.
Yeah, I saw this is a great picture of a bunch of beat writers like peering through like the fence trying to like get a shot of whoever's like throwing playing catch in the outfield. I also like the workout video. So we got a Luke Voit workout video this week, which I think was pretty cool. I'm excited.
Yeah, yeah. It reminds me, all the workout videos and my attention to them just reminds me of how desperate I am for baseball.
Especially as a non-football fan, like I'm dying for baseball. And as a fan of the New Jersey Devils, hockey doesn't exist right now.
Yeah, well, I'm a Rangers fan, so.
We've got a lot of players coming in as non-roster invitees and not a lot of roster spots really open. So as far as I can tell, like there's really no hope for a hitter making the team, or am I wrong? Is there any hitter you can imagine making this team out of spring training?
I could see, given the options that you and Paul and Derek discussed last week for Bird, I could see maybe an infielder sneaking in there if Bird really tanks.
Okay, so that makes sense. So you're thinking that now we need another infielder someone could, could play that spot. Is that Tyler Wade to you? Is that Thairo Estrada? Someone else more interesting?
Tyler Wade. I mean, Boone, I think, has a little bit of a crush on Tyler Wade, so I'd understand that. And it's it would give them a lefty bat. And I think it's probably hot hand out of spring training. Whoever shows that they won't strike out and can get on base more than Bird, I think, is would probably be the most logical candidate, because DJ LeMahieu gives them so much flexibility with the rest of the infield.
And
so
they don't really have to be desperate. Like seeing them taking a first base only backup on a three man bench or three or four man bench, like that just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. You need more flexibility than that.
Yeah, Wade would be a nice backup for Hicks. That's the only thing I could think of. So somebody like that.
I think there's also theoretically a spot for an outfielder. We've learned, surprise, surprise, that Jacoby Ellsbury is not in camp yet and won't be in camp ever. and that means that you have Gardner, Clint Frazier, Giancarlo Stanton, Aaron Hicks, Aaron Judge. I could easily see somebody getting injured and then you having to bring somebody up. So I think there's a shot at an outfielder. But I think it's clear that pitching is there is some open pitching spots here, and pitching is really where the spring training battles are going to be.
Yeah.
So looking at this list, I've sent you a list of non-roster invitees. Who jumps out as the interesting pitcher that we should be following?
Well, for me, it's mainly because of some of the very few duds with respect to the pitching staff, or kind of the bottom two spots. I mean, first off, I forgot that Tommy Kienle was still on the team. And
do you have any expectations for Kienle?
I want to have expectations for him, but he's been really inconsistent between injuries, and his walks came back when he came over from Chicago. So I don't know. I mean, I think they have enough strikeout guys, enough one-inning guys, that if they wanted to go with a long man, I could see them being tempted in there.
So Kenley's spot is open, and then you theoretically have a spot that is being occupied by like nobody right now, right? You have a I forget who's actually technically on the active roster, but we're talking about Luis Sessa. We're calling the last man. Yeah, so anybody can do better than Luis Sessa. All of these there's not a lot of great players on the 40 man. I think that we really talk about. Like we could talk about Loaizaga, or you know, we could talk about Stephen Tarpley or somebody like that. Everybody listening to this kind of knows who those guys are and knows kind of the debate over them. But there's also some interesting players on this non-roster invitation list. Is there anybody here that really jumps out to you as a potential kind of make the team out of camp and be a really good player?
Somebody that you guys actually touched upon a couple weeks ago in your prospect list, Michael King jumps out to me. As somebody who could really sneak into the back. I know that he's young, he's only 23, but sinker ball pitcher, pitches to contact, no walks. That's like, you know, he could be a swing man, could give you length and give you and also come in and spell, give you a spot start. He's the kind of guy that I think would be a really interesting prospect to sneak in here.
Yeah, we didn't talk a lot of stats on that podcast, but I think it's really important to read out the statistics of Michael King last year.
They're ridiculous.
They're crazy. He started in high A. He spent most of the season in double A, and he finished with 40 innings in triple A. His ERA in high A, 1.79. 2.09 in double A and 1.15 in 39 innings across six starts. So it's going really deep into games in triple A. He's not a strikeout pitcher, but he's a control pitcher. My new thing is looking for the Jordan Montgomery. He seems like Jordan Montgomery to me. Somebody who could just show up in camp and turn into like a 200 inning, 4 ERA starter that you love.
I totally agree. His whip across three levels last year was under one in 160 innings, and he's not a strikeout guy, but he's about 8 strikeouts per 9, which is still good, and he's got 30 walks or 29 walks in 160 innings pitched.
Now we should note that he has a stress fracture in his elbow, so he's shut down for 3 weeks. This isn't necessarily like he's having Tommy John surgery, but it's a serious injury, and I don't think he's going to be making the team out of camp for that reason. But like, will be, if like assuming he comes back healthy, he will be like the name at AAA to watch this year, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
So I want to talk about one of mine, Danny Farquhar. Danny Farquhar, I never thought it was a name I was going to think about again. He was this Rays pitcher. He was the Rays closer for a while, who, if I remember correctly, I should have done my homework and looked this up. He had a stroke in the middle of a game, or an aneurysm in the middle of a game a few years ago. Passed out in the dugout, I think, and has kind of come back since then. What are your thoughts on Danny Farquhar?
I mean, from a locker room perspective, he seems just like an incredible dude. Just listening to him talk and how he seems like he's just playing with borrowed money. He knows that he kind of won the lottery just because he's back on a major league camp again. Just from that, you got to root for the guy. I think he was. I didn't think that highly of him when he was in Chicago. So I don't know who he is now after the path that he's walked. But I'm definitely pulling for him just because of everything the guy's been through. And he's also an advocate for the new padded hat, which I think is an interesting spin for pitchers to see. You know what the adoption rate is for that, because he's definitely got some safety concerns out there, and it's nice to see somebody doing something about it.
Yeah, if you haven't had a chance, go see his interview he did when he reported to spring training. It was one of those things that, like, just really makes you like the guy. And I wish him the best, and I hope he makes the team. There was a point in time when Danny Farquhar was considered a pretty good pitcher. Unfortunately, something like an aneurysm isn't the kind of injury that, like, lingers for a long time. So it's not like it affected him for a couple of years before it finally hit him, in that game. So I'm not sure his skills are really there anymore. He really has a high walk rate and isn't striking as many guys as he used to, but, you know, something I hope he succeeds. And I'm really just excited to watch him play in camp this year. Other non-roster invites on this list that strike out to you? Any names that you recognize?
I think, no one is really jumping. I look at the way the roster is constructed with these two open, one and a half open bullpen spots is really what we're talking about here. And this just reeks of Scranton Shuttle to me, because they've got their five all-star level relievers at the back end. And then it's whoever's going to give them length. I mean, they'll probably end up doing something safe and go with, like, David Hale or something like that. That'll just come up and be what he's always been. I don't see anybody that's going to pop here, though. Nobody that's as ready as Michael Kang with except the injury. So
yeah, no one's jumping out. Like, it doesn't make sense that it makes sense to have that open roster spot to bring people back and forth. Just because you have fairly low leverage innings to give the last guy in your bullpen. And you're going to need somebody to eat up innings and then be sent down. And even for somebody like David Hale, somebody that you are comfortable DFAing if you have to.
Yeah.
I suspect that is what we're going to see with that last roster spot. There are some names, though, that I think just to keep an eye on. One is Rex Brothers. Rex Brothers is a lefty. He's really good against lefties. He's not so good against righties. He has been terrible for most of his recent career. He's now, I think, like 30-something years old, 31 years old, and, hasn't been good since probably he was 25. But he was in Colorado for a long time. He was basically Colorado's closer at one point, and at one point was considered somebody with a lot of skills. I think there's a world where, like, some Yankee pitching coach kind of puts him back together and he becomes pretty good. A lefty specialist, somebody who can fill some of those innings. The Yankees don't really have a lefty specialist on their team. Say what you want about Zach Britton, but he's not that great against lefties versus righties. And so, and Roraldis Chapman is closing. So that's a player I think that they can add. I'm kind of with you that I don't think they need another, like, massive strikeout righty to make their team look good. Another player I think that I'm just kind of keeping an eye on is Raynel Espinal.
That was, yep.
So Raynel Espinal, what do you know about Raynel Espinal?
I know very little. I know the numbers tell me he looks like another strikeout power righty to me. His strikeout numbers are very good. I think he's well over a strikeout per inning in the minors. Look at the numbers here. Yeah, so he's got it's about 1 1/3 strikeouts per inning, which is obviously very good. Walk rate is moderate, and he's been a little bit slow to blossom, right? So he's 27, and he finished last year at AAA. So he's definitely behind the curve.
And he wasn't like an independent league guy. Like, this guy's been floating around the Yankee system for a long time.
No, not at all.
So I remember when I first learned Reino Espinal's name, and I was looking at last year's non-roster invites list. And I was like, here's the name I don't recognize. Who is this guy? Holy crap, he had an ERA of about one in the low minors, mostly in low A, but also a little bit in double A, a little bit in high A. Has a crazy strikeout rate. Has had at times a really good walk rate, at times a not so good walk rate. He seems to me like one of those players that we could just like blink in 3 months and he's Dellin Betances. And I think that's really exciting. I don't know much about what he throws. I haven't seen him play. But I'm glad that he's a non-roster invite this year. He didn't have as good of a year in 2018, though he still had a pretty good year in 2018, notably entirely at AAA. He had a 13 strikeouts per nine at AAA, so like pretty good. 2.8 FIP, 3.09 ERA. So not bad, but not blowing the world away like he was the season before. And there's a lot of potential in that kind of player. We don't know enough about him really to say much more.
Yeah, I think the only other note here with respect to this list, Acevedo, I think, is at camp, right?
Is Acevedo still a prospect?
I was waiting to hear you guys talk about him 2 weeks ago, and I don't know what he is. I think on anybody, it is a good indicator of where your farm system is if a guy who's 11 feet tall that throws 100 miles an hour doesn't even crack the top 10 anymore. He's not that old. He was in the futures game a couple years ago. I think as a reliever, I would consider him as a dark horse candidate. And they brought him up last year for a cup of coffee for that reason. I don't know if I haven't seen an indication that they're fully committed to transitioning him over.
They have been strangely reluctant to promote him through the minor leagues, and I don't understand it. Like, he has been at AA for two seasons and has an ERA under three at AA.
Yeah.
2.363 ERA at AA. As a starter, I get the sense that they just don't want to pull the trigger on making him a reliever. And so they're trying to make the starter thing work when pretty much everybody's saying, no, this guy, just let this guy throw a 100-mile-an-hour fastball, with decent control out of the bullpen, and he'll be fine. And I think that's kind of where we're heading. The strikeout rate in the minors is just not good enough for somebody who has that kind of fastball. Like, you don't want, like, the best-case scenario for a player like him to be, like, the bad version of Nathan Eovaldi.
Yeah. Well, I think also he's had several bouts with blisters, hasn't he? Also, I think long.
Yeah, that why he missed most of his time last year? I think.
I think there was some blister stuff. Yeah, and that's just kind of maybe that's just your body telling you that hey, I can do this at one inning at a time, but don't ask me to do it for seven. So, it seems like a natural fit.
I mean, we didn't talk about he's on the 40 man, so he's definitely, I think, one of those kind of candidates to shuffle between the two. Some other non-roster invite players I just want to talk about really quickly. Mike Ford is on the list.
I was going to ask,
Didn't have a good season last year, but hey, Mike Ford's on the list, so that's great. He'll have a great season in AAA this year if they actually promote him to AAA. Kyle Holder, Scott's guy, is on the list. Not good.
No chance.
Yeah. Billy Burns is on the list. Billy Burns was a fast, like, leadoff guy for the Oakland Athletics for like 2 years, and I only know him because he was like a really good fantasy player for a while. He seems to me like he's center field insurance, and I think it's smart that the Yankees have some kind of center field insurance in camp.
Yeah, they are definitely thin there. I think Brett Gardner's kind of the break the glass in case of fire plan.
Clint Frazier maybe could pull it off, but you probably don't want him to play there. Same with Judge.
Yeah, no, I think Judge honestly is more ready than Clint Frazier. I still can't get over when Clint Frazier first came up. There was a humpback liner to left field that he fielded and just threw the ball straight into the ground. And the ball didn't even make it to second base on the roll. And the announcers, I think Ken Singleton was calling the game and said, I don't even know what that was. And I dread the thought of him being in center field with the yips. So please not him.
So the Yankees, I think, are smart to kind of have some of those players in camp. And it'll be a AAA team with some backups. And I feel like the Yankees in the last couple of years have actually been really thin in terms of that kind of like major league depth, the replacement players sitting at AAA style. And we've ended up with God, who was our terrible outfielder last year that I can't remember his name? Shane Robinson, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that guy. That guy was so bad I don't even remember his name. Like the Yankees have better than that sitting at AAA, it looks like, or will, which I think is a good sign and something we should kind of look forward to. That's about all I've got for this episode. We after this we're gonna transition. I interviewed Drew Kreisman with the Colorado, who's a beat writer for the Colorado Rockies. We talked a little bit about some of the players that are coming in. We talked a little bit about Tulowitzki. Had a great Tulowitzki story that I'm not going to spoil here. Or now you can listen to it in a few seconds. We talked a little bit about Final Fantasy. He hosts a Final Fantasy podcast that I had to ask him a question about as a massive nerd. And so here's our interview with Drew Kreisman. And for everybody else, we will be back next week to talk about whatever the Yankees do in spring training. I'm desperate for a topic. Thank you for joining me, Jim. For everybody else, here's the second episode, the second segment. We now welcome to the show Drew Kreisman. Drew is an editor and beat writer for BSN Rockies. He's the host of the Final Fantasy Weekly podcast, which we're going to get to. And most importantly, he is an expert on the Colorado Rockies. Drew, thank you for coming on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Yeah. So one of our great listeners recommended that we have you on the show to talk about some of these Rockies players the Yankees have brought up. I'm curious, of Tulowitzki, Ottavino, LeMahieu, who should I be most excited about?
Probably LeMahieu. He's certainly the most consistent, most. If you're a risk averse person, it's definitely LeMahieu. Ottavino and Tulo have their upside, to be sure, but they've both had their downsides over their careers, absolutely, and very recently even. But LeMahieu is one of the most consistent, professional, everyday ball players I've ever had the privilege to cover.
So right now the Yankees kind of have like an open plan for what position he's going to play, meaning no plan. They said everyday player, but we don't know where. He's played second base almost exclusively for the Rockies. Do you think he could still play shortstop?
I think he could play an okay shortstop, but there have been a handful of times over the years the Rockies have experimented with moving him to, like, he played, I think, a game or two at third base that didn't look good one year after Nolan got hurt. So I'm curious. I'll be watching some Yankees baseball to see what DJ LeMahieu looks like if they play him anywhere else, because he's just a genius at second base. He's so figured out all of the nuances of that position. If it was me making this decision, I would be very reluctant to play him at shortstop. He's not going to kill you there. He's just a very solid defender, great hands. He doesn't have the strongest arm in the world or the best range in the world, so his mistake-free baseball, I just think, plays better at second than it does at short.
Does he have an arm?
He has a very accurate arm, and I'd put his power about average.
So he's probably not a third base option for the Yankees, even though the Yankees have a much, much better setup at second than at third.
I would think not, for precisely that reason.
All right. The other question, the thing that people disagreed on about LeMahieu when he was signed is how well he will be hitting outside of Coors Field. Everybody agrees he's a great defender. And depending on how you adjust his ballpark statistics, he's either like an average hitter or a well below average hitter. Do you think that LeMahieu will be closer to that average hitter or far worse in Yankee Stadium?
I think people are going to be surprised at how good of a hitter he is. Overall, I think it's pulled down because he doesn't hit for a ton of power. But I think I used the word before, consistency. There's something to be said for a guy that hits 270 to 300 as a batting average. He doesn't draw a ton of walks because he doesn't have the power. So guys, you know, pitch to him. But he can hit the ball where it's pitched. He doesn't strike out very often. He doesn't go into extended slumps. So his 280 batting average plays up. And so I think he'll be closer to just an average or even in some ways an above average hitter if you take into account that he really doesn't slump very often.
I get the sense from people who've kind of given me feedback since he's come onto the team that he's a fan favorite, that he's the guy that we're going to love at the end of the season. Is that how his reputation was in Colorado?
Yeah, he's an interesting cat in that way because he's pretty quiet and reserved, except for in huge moments. And then all of that fire comes out, and the fans just love it and eat him up. He kind of feels like he's everybody's little brother that you're constantly rooting for to do well because he's so self-effacing and he's so humble. But when he comes through for his guys, you can tell how much it means to him. And he plays for his teammates. He plays for his fans. He's never going to skimp on effort. So yeah, I think he'll become a fan favorite out there very quickly. I bet he'll win over a lot of the people who, when they first heard the news, went, "Ah, DJ LeMahieu." I think it'll take about a month for at least half of those people to come around.
As a fellow EJ with some French in my family, I one thing I have a mental picture of DJ LeMahieu as a tiny second baseman, like toolsy second baseman, like essentially my mental picture of Gleyber Torres or someone like that. But he's a big guy, right?
Yeah, he's a legitimate 6'3 or 6'4, and I think that's one of the reasons why I guess people have talked about maybe can he play some first base. But it's unusual watching him over there at second because there's literally nobody else. They compare him to High Sox. Some of the guys would call him High Sox because, yeah, he's just a tall second baseman, which is unusual, but it definitely helps him make some plays that other guys won't.
All right, so let's move on and talk a little bit about Adam Ottavino. So the Yankees got Adam Ottavino, now their second big-time strikeout high-walk reliever from the five boroughs of New York. Brooklyn instead of the Bronx, in the case of Dellin Betances. He seems like he is a very Dellin Betances-like player. Like, lots and lots of dominating strikeouts, but he could, walk the ballpark at any given time. Is that accurate?
Yeah, that's 100% accurate, yeah.
So he'll walk the bases low, then get himself out of it?
Exactly right. Guys don't string together. No one's going to get three or four base hits in a row off of Adam Ottavino. The game he lost in the NLDS, lost a battle to Christian Yelich, leadoff, walked him. He can't hold anybody on base, so Christian Yelich was essentially able to walk to second, walk to third, and then come in. So you got to be careful. Yeah, the slider, I've said it this way, the slider can be as difficult for catchers to handle as it can be for batters to hit. And so, if Gary Sanchez is going to have an interesting time back there.
Yeah, Gary Sanchez, he just keeps drawing the bad straws here. So he has a reputation as being, I don't even want to say tinkerer, but somebody who has taken some more unconventional approaches to improving his pitches. Do you know those stories? I'm actually sort of unfamiliar with those stories. What has he done, and was it like obvious when he was on the Rockies?
Yeah, and he would be pretty open about it. He embraces a lot of the advanced statistics, the analytics. He reads everything. He spends time on, all of the Fangraphs, Baseball Reference, Baseball Prospectus, all of those types of places. He makes sure to, he checks Driveline. If you go in the clubhouse after the game, he's immediately sitting there checking the video on each one of his pitches and release points. And so he's a very analytical mind, and he can be pretty open about tinker. As you put it, I would say that's fair. He is a bit of a tinkerer, and he takes a very intellectual approach to the game.
All right. So that's about, I think, all we can really talk about Ottavino. I think he's a really good reliever who I'm very interested to watch and excited to see. Let's talk about Troy Tulowitzki. So you haven't Tulowitzki was traded in 2015 away from the Colorado Rockies. So you haven't seen him up close and personal in that time. But I just to like go back to that moment in time when he was traded. What was your opinion of Tulowitzki?
At the time, I thought he was the best player in franchise history. I thought he was one of the best players in baseball. The only blemish on his record were the injuries. But there was a moment there where he was an elite defender at short and an elite offensive player in the game. And that just doesn't exist. I actually kind of infamously at one point argued that on a game-to-game basis, I thought he was more valuable than Mike Trout.
Wow.
And I stand by that.
And the numbers bear it out. I mean, when you look at his defensive numbers, it's shocking how good they are.
Right. He was just insanely good in Colorado, but it was always a nightmare and a head scratcher because he couldn't stay on the field. And so, I think he got MVP votes in 6 of the 8 years he was here, but never a number one because he only ever played in 100 games at most, oftentimes. And so, that became an
issue. How did fans react to that? Because I got the sense that he got a reputation for being like a player that doesn't work as hard or who isn't as tough as other players. But is that accurate? And you know, is that really how fans approached him as you know toward the end of his career with Colorado?
Well, yeah, those are actually kind of two different questions because
yeah, that's true.
Yes, the fans did think of him that way, and no, I don't believe that's accurate. In fact, I having gotten to know him just a little bit before he left, think it was the complete opposite. The guy's trying too hard. He's going too hard. He was looking for every answer. He started sleeping in a hyperbaric chamber. He was doing all of these special workouts. He figured, well, I'll just build all the muscle in the world. I can't get hit I can't get hurt if I'm like the strongest person on the team, right? And so I think he just was trying too hard to get back out on the field and kept re-hurting himself or kept taking the option of the surgery that will allow him to get back out there sooner rather than the surgery that might more permanently fix the problem. So, yes, it was frustrating, but no, it's not because the guy doesn't work hard. I've never been around somebody who wants to win baseball games more than Troy Tulowitzki.
So I want to talk about this hyperbaric chamber. So that is what to oxygenate his blood? Is that why you would be in a hyperbaric chamber?
Yeah, and there are a lot of theories out here about the way altitude affects guys' bodies. Charlie Blackman has talked at length about all the weird things that can go on, and you can't recover when going from altitude to sea level. And so some of that was just trying to balance all of that. But, yeah, I think he's just trying to get his blood to naturally cure his body.
How much of the conversation in Colorado revolves around Coors Field?
Too much? Is that fair?
I didn't want to ask you too many questions about it because I figured, yeah, you got to get asked these questions all the time, or at least think about it too much.
It's a fair question. It really is. I would just really like a reframing of the entire conversation. And I think people oftentimes way oversell what Coors Field does to certain players' offense without taking a deeper look into the picture there. And we've seen this like play out with Larry Walker's Hall of Fame candidacy. It does get frustrating when it's the first and last sentence of everything written about Larry Walker or Todd Helton. Because it's just not as extreme as people tend to think, but it is the most offensive environment. Right.
Like we know how to do the adjustment. It's not hard. Like I can do it in 5 minutes. Just basic math. That's what kills me about these. Like I yes, you should discount players' performance based on ballpark, but we learned how to do that 20 years ago.
Right. And I really like this new DRC plus stat and would highly recommend anybody who's interested. I think it gives a much clearer indication, especially with players like Nolan Arenado, how good they actually are.
And I encourage everybody to apply to our mothership baseball prospectus. Mm-hmm. And if you're interested in DRC Plus, we did an episode on that about two episodes ago. You should go talk about it. Yeah, go listen to it because it was very good. So let's move on. That's the Rockies. I think we brought in some really interesting players. I'm excited for them. But then I'm really excited because I saw when I was about to call you that you also host the Final Fantasy Weekly podcast. And I'm an old school Final Fantasy fan. Like in the 90s when I was a kid, I loved playing those games. And then at some point, I just didn't have a PlayStation. And so I stopped picking up the games. And so now that they're all being re-released, I stopped at Final Fantasy VII. If I could pick one Final Fantasy game to revisit or to go either download on my Switch or download my computer, what game should I download?
I mean, if you're fine with Super Nintendo graphics, and I know some people are like, it looks wonky, it's 2Ds, pixelated, or whatever, but I think Final Fantasy VI is maybe the single greatest video game.
I've played that. I can tell you about Terra and Locke and all those guys.
Yeah, so if anyone's going to revisit something... But if you haven't played past 7, I highly recommend 10 if you're into metaphysical weirdness. If you've got a philosophical bone in your body.
I do.
Yeah. And Final Fantasy X is, for me, it's the most emotional of all of them. I cried at the end of that game, and I'm not afraid to admit it. But it's also, I was a philosophy major in college, and there's some real metaphysical questions, some real Rene Descartes challenges that are worthy of anyone's time.
Well, I think therefore I am. As a Providence College graduate, I have my fill of philosophy training. So I'm going to pick up Final Fantasy X. I think that's a great suggestion. Where can our listeners find you on the internet? And what should they listen to next?
Yeah, you know, I do the at BSN Rockies on Twitter. I'm at Drew Kreisman on Twitter as well. We do a daily Rockies podcast. Do obviously there's written material at BSN Denver. I'm constantly on the beat. I covered 79 home games last year for the Rockies. And yeah, the Final Fantasy stuff is at FF Weekly Pod. And I appreciate you bringing that up, man, because that's mostly been a fun project to do with my brother and for us to relive, you know, our glory days and some of our favorite stories that have been told. So yeah, that's a lot of fun. I'm out there on Twitter and Facebook, and I try to make myself super accessible. So anybody that's got any questions, hit me up. I'm more than happy to answer anything.
Drew, thank you for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you.